Now, as in Pilgrim's Progress, John has travelers who go with him. The most important one is a man named Virtue. And Virtue is a figure in the allegory who, like Virgil in the Divine Comedy, represents the best of classical learning and discipline. And Lewis had a great love for the, you know, classical world, the sort of Greco-Roman world. And Virtue is a good character, a good man, but despite his discipline, he lacks both joy and purpose, what the Greeks called telos, a purposeful end. He doesn't have that. And so, like Dante's virtuous pagans, Virtue becomes fixed forever in a state of desire without hope. He has discipline, but no desire to move beyond that. Now, in the allegory, Lewis has a map, and it has a north and a south. And in the north is one kind of temptation, or one kind of misdirection, if you will. In the south is another. Virtue represents the north. In the northern section of Lewis's allegory, his landscape of the soul, if you will, lies the dryness and rigidity of the cold idolatry that virtue represents. The best word for it is stoicism, that old classical thing which is discipline but lacks joy and desire. To use Nietzsche's phrase, it's Apollonian. It's too overly rational and systematic. In the south, on the other hand, we have people who have not frozen and systematized their joy, but have overindulged and perverted it. So if the north is too Apollonian, the south is too Dionysian or Dionysiac. It's too wild. These people have overindulged their passion and have lost the joy itself. Now, something interesting about this. In Surprised by Joy, which is Lewis's actual autobiography, we discover that the young Lewis also had to steer between north and south on his road to Christianity. Let me explain. For Lewis, he learned that he had to resist the lure of cold stoicism and materialism. Think of Lucretius, if you know the Roman writers. In other words, the young Lewis wanted to, like his mother, he wanted to repress his desires and repress his emotions and be a typical Englishman, if you will, and be sort of cold and rational and not allow things to get to him, if you will. That was one temptation. The other temptation that people don't often know about is that the young Lewis also had what he calls a ravenous, erotic lust for occult wisdom. And no, you know, the young Lewis worshipped William Butler Yeats, who was sort of an occult figure, the great Irish poet. And Lewis, he admits to us that his search for the occult wisdom or the occult knowledge was really at its core a kind of eroticism. Well, what the young Lewis had to learn was that neither extreme, neither stoicism nor occultism, ever satisfies. Occultism only promises forbidden knowledge. Stoicism, on the other hand, all that does is relieve us from the fear that we learn from occultism. But neither one, Lewis says, satisfies, and both are irrelevant to joy. Those are false paths. All right, let me end this lecture by discussing four more elements of desire or joy or Sehnsucht that will, by the way, come up again and again in this lecture series. First of all, and this to me is one of the most amazing things Lewis discovered, and I learned this from him. Lewis argues that it is often the good and noble things, not the low, evil, petty ones, that most often serve as idols, as roadblocks and detours on our journey to true joy. Think about it. If you are an alcoholic, if you are a drug addict, if you are caught in a cycle of fornication and you know, broken romances, I think you're going to be pretty sure that there's more to life than that. In other words, nobody's going to take drug addiction and turn that into, or few people, maybe Leary or somebody, Timothy Leary, but few people are going to turn that into a religion. They realize that they're miserable and that they're not getting anywhere near the joy that they desired when they were young. So those things don't fool us. You know what fools us? Good things. Things like patriotism, beauty, mother love, aesthetics, all of the religion itself. Those are good things, but you know what? They're so good that they make really good counterfeits. It's very easy for a mother, let's say, to believe the maternal love she feels for her child is a sort of religion and is a satisfactory religion that can answer all the questions and give her joy. And so, again, it's the good things that often lead us astray. In a work called The Four Loves, Lewis said that love, when it becomes a god, often becomes a demon. When you try to take something from the earthly realm and make it divine or a final end, it always ends up as a demon. And that will come up again and again in this lecture series.